Hey, hi everybody. It's Patricia. And before I introduce the topic and my wonderful partner who's going to be on this is I just want to let you know that I'm excited to announce that I have a new book coming out this September, and it's called Evolutionary Relationships: Unleashing the Power of Mutual Awakening. And that you can learn more about the book and download the first three chapters for free at evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com. So it's evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com. And it would be wonderful. I'd love to share it with you. So today is the inaugural conversation dedicated to my book that's coming out, as I said, in September. And who better to have that conversation with than the person who was there when the impulses and the guidance were just beginning to come through for this work. So both his capacity as an integral visionary and his evolutionary heart and warmth really helped me to be able to hold and nurture and birth a different dimension of consciousness. I'm sure any of you who've ever, begin to bring something into the world that is kind of new and maybe doesn't have a whole lot of agreement, it can be easily crushed, especially by the people around you. And I appreciate Jeff Salzman on so many levels, but his willingness as a friend and a fellow spiritual teacher and luminary that he is, that he really listened and allowed me to not feel like I was crazy, and allowed and was like actively supportive in discovering what evolutionary relationships are and the evolutionary collective as well. So Jeff, who many of you I'm sure already know, is an integralist, an evolutionary, and a public commentator who's worked in adult education and transformation for 30 years. He's the co-founder of CareerTrack. Some of you may be familiar with that, which was one of the world's leading professional development companies and a longtime spiritual practitioner in many different traditions. I mean, I think he's probably studied everything in depth, actually. And he also helped Ken Wilber to develop the Integral Institute and has spent the last few years as the co-founder and head of the Boulder Integral, the Integral Center. And he, I think most of you probably know him now from his podcast and blog and various events that he does through the Daily Evolver. So he's keeping very busy, right, Jeff?
I
Keeping out of trouble for the most part.
Yeah, totally. And what a privilege, And thank you for inviting me on to your show, Patricia. And I'm very happy to be here. And I guess, do you want to just, shall we just get started?
Yeah, I mean, the name of this particular webcast was Love is an Evolutionary Force. And you and I have talked about everything from Donald Trump to I
Right.
don't know, a lot of things, many things. So, yeah. So I
It's the
think
law now. Every conversation has to be about Trump. So,
I know. I'm sure that'll come into this disclosure.
but.
Yeah. So let's just dive in.
Yeah. Well, I love your book. I just want to put that out there, Patricia. I read a lot of books and I interview people and, I look over books and I get what they have to say and, as best I can. But I rarely have a book that pulls me in like yours did. And actually, I feel like I've been transmitted, honestly. I mean, I have,
Wow.
as evolutionaries, we're looking for, what's next? Because it's going to be different. Tribal consciousness is very different from, fundamentalist consciousness, which is different from modernist consciousness and postmodern consciousness. They're all different. And what's next is, of course, fascinating. And so I wanted to just have you talk a little bit about, that next stage that I feel. I'm an Enneagram 5. I'm a head guy. I'd rather think about it than feel it. But I do feel it, and it's great. It really. You have a quote. It's one of the things I love about your book is your quotes are so good, too. But You have a quote in there by George Feuerstein, I think, is his name, and it's, ultimately there can be no healing until we have restored our primal trust in life. And I feel like there's something that's a piece of what we're doing here, is instead of walking around thinking this shouldn't be happening, it's awful that it is, I can't stand it, somebody needs to be blamed or condemned, that we sort of make friends with the whole thing. And I don't know. So I'm getting to digress here, but what gets sparked in you, dear?
Okay. First of all, thank you. Really, thank you. I mean, because we haven't really talked about the book before this, and I really appreciate your taking it in that way. Because so this is new. Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, teaching, I've, you know, done thousands of hours of that, but book writing is I'm a little more new and probably a little more insecure there. So I appreciate what you said.
Well, I got to stop you there and say, Patricia, it's so beautifully written that I found myself rereading paragraphs. I mean, I don't do that.
Wow.
It's really something. It's very, very good. I really recommend it.
Thank you.
And we'll be recommending it. So, yes.
Appreciate that. Okay.
Right on.
I think what you said initially, which has to do with, you know, speaking to the people that are listening as evolutionaries, you know, part of what an evolutionary is someone who is interested in what's next, you know, like where's the edge of existence moving? And we know as evolutionaries, sometimes maybe we forget because, you know, the paradigm that we've come from is a stagnant universe. You know, the universe was created, you know, it's here and we're here and, you know, there's a sense of everything being like solid, and evolutionaries know that it's all evolving and it's all changing.
Right.
And one of the contributions that I believe that we can make, especially those of us who, you know, are awake enough to be on this call or listening, you know, we're kind of paying attention to something other than maybe our own survival or, you know, reinforcing our own belief systems, is that we need to be available to where the edge wants to take us and come together in that. And for me, the fundamental era, you know, the 5,000 year era of individual enlightenment and personal salvation, which is, you know, between ourselves and the divine and our own work on ourselves, etc., is really is changing. You know, almost nobody knows that it's changing, but there are, you know, at least some, there are some people that are kind of going, I don't think, to go back to Trump, you know, I don't think that individuals that are powerful or falsely powerful or even saints, you know, individualness is not going to take us into the next era.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't. You know, even if you had tons of brilliant individuals, that doesn't mean that the relatedness is actually happening. I mean, we know lots of brilliant and awake and lovely individuals that don't necessarily relate well.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, they one is not the other, you know, there are two separate things. And the book, you know, Evolutionary Relationships is pointing towards what do we pay attention to in order to begin to attend to the space between us, you know, the level of consciousness that is awakened together so that we can actually begin to grow in and through that.
Yeah.
And I think it's more fun. There's a quote from you. So one of the quotes I love of yours that I have actually used is from Walt Whitman.
Yeah.
And it's the one that says, we were together. I don't remember the rest.
Yeah, that's so fabulous.
We were together. I don't remember the rest.
Yeah.
And you know as well as I do, like, there's something about it. It makes me want to cry. No matter what we deal with, you know, no matter how difficult, no matter how frightening, you know, even a personal disaster, when you're not alone, when you truly are connected to another or others in a deep way that is real, like that you're in and for each other for real.
Yeah.
it's there's something that makes it completely not only tolerable, but sometimes even inspiring.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, I look at it from the perspective of evolution always. That's where I go, you know, and so the evolution of consciousness. And we see that we came out of a tribal consciousness where in the early humanity didn't really have the individual online.
Yeah.
I mean, our identities would be merged and individuality came online. It's not unlike a child who is merged with their parents for the first couple years of their lives and then begin to individuate and find their own strength. And that's a beautiful thing, to become an individual. But we lose something, you know, we lose something. And so what I love about the evolutionary view is that we actually, to move forward, we actually want to go back and reintegrate. That's why we call this integral. We want to integrate what was left behind when we individuated. And we still want to keep our individuality, but in the sacred world to come and the relationships that we're talking about will have a lot of the same kind of, I always love this word louche. Terry Patton talks about it. I forget where it comes from, but it's this sort of sense of the liquid space between us, you know.
Louche,
L-O-U-S-C-H, I believe, is a Swiss word. And it's that liquid space, that sort of tribal and also transcendent space that we enter together that we've almost forgotten about in the modern world. And yet I've had tastes of it. But I'm afraid for me, that's all I've had. I think you do with your group. You have a foolproof technology for bringing it on.
Yeah, we do.
And maybe we talk a little bit about that, Patricia. How would you describe that, and how might we bring that to our lives just as we're living them?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing that I have a slight twist on what you just said. I absolutely and utterly agree and celebrate, you know, the accomplishment of our individuation over the last few thousand years is mind blowing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mind blowing, you know, our inner development and outer development and intelligence and the level of complexity that we can comprehend and understand. I mean, I can't remember what TV show it was, but it was something where they were talking about like the primal, you know, the red level, you know, the level where everybody's just bullying and, you know, Attila the Hun. It was like the Attila the Hun sort of level of life. And that when rational thought came in, it was such a miracle, you know, that you didn't have people just beating people over the heads and, you know, with spears, you know, that there was actually some level of maybe right isn't, doesn't eat might. It's like maybe there's a right thing and maybe there's rational thinking and, you know, like what a miracle that was at the time.
Absolute miracle.
Yeah. I mean, amazing. And so, you know, to me, the individuation that we've accomplished. And now, you know, you're on your computer and you get ads that like respond to something that you Googled the day before. And, you know, Pandora knows what you want to listen to. And, you know, I mean, everywhere you go, you can get soy milk and this kind of milk and that. You know, I mean, the level of individuation is insane. I mean, it's actually, it's sort of gone to the extreme of, we feel entitled to a level of precision and attunement to who we are and what we want and how we want it moment to moment that we get sort of affronted when it's not happening. But the next stage is to take that fullness of individuation and instead of reintegrate something that was there before, I think Teilhard was accurate in saying that now these individual cells can come together by sharing what we've, like you said, sort of hacked into, is discovered. If you share a particular kind of energy with each other, not just anything, not just a conversation about sports, not just a intellectual conversation, not even like a heartfelt, like I'm telling you and sharing with you something very painful that happened to me and you're listening with deep empathy. That doesn't even work. You know, like that isn't even what bridges the divide of having us literally enter into one another in an interpenetrating way where we're actually inside one another and that something greater is born out of that. We actually become water. You know, the hydrogen and oxygen become water.
Mm-hmm.
And that the individuation.
A new thing emerges.
Something
that wasn't
new.
There before, yes.
And it's of a higher order. The thing that's incredible is that in my experience, the what is called forth in your uniqueness is only given in its fullness inside of that level of relatedness.
Say that again, Patricia.
So I think no one's real genius, nobody's particular gift, you know, the real, like almost raison d'etre for your existence, you know, the particularity that Jeff is or that I am cannot just be shoved into the world individually. You can't just push that out into the world by discovering your higher purpose. I mean, it just doesn't work. That your real deep gift on the deepest level only is called forth inside of that level of relatedness and unity. It doesn't get lost. It is made full and real, and it's empowered in a way that is not empowered if you're on your own trying to shove yourself into the world.
Hallelujah.
Seriously, you know, and the piece that I haven't shared with you that I'm even more excited because we keep seeing the depth of how do you activate this consciousness that is shared is not only there's a deep place of sharing that is what I call the origination point. So it's not your personality. It's not even on a soul level, you know, kind of your energetic connections or your subtle level energies and, you know, sort of some of the things that people are working on. There's a causal dimension of self that I call the origination point that is the most unique and distinct opening that you are, but it's an opening. It's a space. It's not a thing. And when that connects with my origination point, because it's easy for the something nothings to kind of come together easily. Because there's nothing separating them. They're not solid. From that place, then this unity arises that's actually very powerful. But the piece that has really we've just been working with for the last 2 months is something that I've experienced my whole life, but I never had the words for. And Beatrice Boutreau, who is a Tay Hardian scholar, she called it spondic energy or spondic love. And spondic in, I think, Greek means a kind of outpouring, like pouring into. So it's like me, spondic would be me pouring into you. And, but the spondic part, so this is the part that was just like, oh my God, I was so excited because I've so experienced this in my life and I didn't have words for it. I've called it in and for. So spondic is where it's the kind of love that I know you and everyone has felt towards someone or something where you literally, like from your heart, you're literally like you want to give them life. It's almost like you want them to have everything. Like it jumps from your heart to theirs. Like may you be, like I am, may you be, may you have everything, may every, you know, your all your potentials, everything. Come into fruition. You usually have it for your children. I mean, you have that for certain people. I mean, it literally is a heart, like it explodes from one heart to another. And it's the opposite of competition. It is the quintessential opposite of separation. It's like, I want you to have everything, you know, like almost like I'm God and I am now imbuing you with all life, you know, all life, and all love. And you now have everything you ever needed, you know? And you know, you can feel it. It's like spondic love is, and we have it. And so we've been practicing with not only that openness and the origination point, you know, mixing, but spondically love, you know, like igniting one another. And it is so strong and it's so human. It's so what we have for each other in our hearts.
Oh.
And it doesn't depend on personality. It doesn't even depend on liking them. You know, you don't even have to feel chemistry or anything. When you drop into that deep causal level connection, that spondic love is there.
Yeah.
And it ignites us. That's what really like draws forth. Like, how could you not be everything that you could be in the face of being loved like that?
Well, yeah.
Right?
And you know, you're talking me into it here. I'm thinking I might rethink this love for other people thing. I find them. I'm glad you say you don't have to like them because I find them so annoying sometimes.
Well, but they
a
are.
Lot of times.
No, but here's the thing. People, I will completely concur. People on the level of if you think about what's it going to take to make a difference in the world, right? People on their personality level, you know, on an egoic level, totally annoying most of the time.
Well, thank you for agreeing with me.
I agree with you. And also, even when people are being seductive and charming, it's even when you really are awake enough, even that is sort of tiring. You know, it's like, it's kind of like, okay, whatever, I'm being manipulated, you know?
Right,
On that subtle level, you know, so there are those in the more postmodern kind of work where people learn subtle energies and they can read you and they, you know, can sense everything. Even that's kind of irritating. I mean, that can actually also be not entirely something. I don't particularly love that either at this point.
Right on.
But in this deep causal level, which is where the real unification is, and it really is free from all of that other stuff. Now, it doesn't mean we don't have to deal with the other stuff, but it actually, the unification happens and the love happens and it's real. From that bond of in and for you and vice versa, then if you and I move up to the subtle level or the other level where we're being separate and annoying, we have a deeper place to return to.
Yeah.
And we have something stronger so that when I listen to you talk about something that I don't agree with or I have a big problem with, I'm connected to you in a much deeper way that I could possibly find a way that we could work together even though we're really different.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's really terrific, Patricia.
I mean you know that.
Really helps. That's really helpful.
I mean, as a lover, like, you know, like with the person you're in love with, when you're really connected, you can deal with the other things that will always be there. You know, the personality, power trips, you know, the various things that humans do when we're not, you know, because we're not pure.
Right.
If somehow it's workable, you know, like you can work with it because you haven't broken connection. When you break connection, you can't do anything.
Yeah. No, I really like that because it does feel more real because a lot of particularly progressive spirit, well, actually even traditional spirituality, you feel like you got to love people all the time in the sort of everyday way. And, you know, we can't. So we feel like failures. We're going to hell, you know, and, or we're doing it wrong or we're defective. And this actually allows people to be annoying.
Yeah.
Because they are and we are and on this actually gross level, we talk about this causal, subtle, and we call
and
it gross or physical level.
Yeah. Right.
We're actually supposed to have conflict.
Right.
Conflict is one of the engines of evolution. And so I love that this allows us to find that connection at the deepest fucking place there. That I love your origination point. I love that. I want to hear more about that actually.
Okay.
But to contact that and contact that and the other people then let the rest of it take care of itself, because we got that as sort of our baseline origination point. So beautiful.
And the connection, the building of, the weaving of that deep level of connectivity. So between you and another, like part of what I talk about in the book is, how do you make that connection and how do you build it? And what are the activating principles? What, you know, like if you pay attention to this a little bit, it helps. If you pay attention to this a little bit, it helps. You know, it helps to nurture, cultivate, strengthen. Trust is one of the things, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But so if you're paying attention to the building of that, which is operating almost more on a DNA level, it's like your cells are mixing and your DNA, something is being built that is, it becomes water. It becomes something that can't break unless you do something really, I don't know how you break. Water back. It's pretty hard.
Well, you know that, I mean, I've always loved that example and I've often pondered it. I remember in like a ninth grade science class thinking oxygen and hydrogen, two gases, and you put them in a bottle and mix them and they stay gases. They just mix. But then there's some kind of chemical thing that goes on where they actually integrate and become a molecule.
Yeah.
And these two gases create something that is not only unpredictable, but it's mind-blowing. It turns into water.
Yeah, it's a miracle.
How did that happen? Remember, you know, I'm 14 years old thinking, how did that happen? But it is like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's that emergent, I mean, evolution is based on those. So every time,
absolutely.
You know, like how did matter come from light?
Yes.
How did life come from matter? How did consciousness come from, you know, living creatures? I mean, it's all like how does that work?
And I know.
At this point, you know, even though it sounds kind of crazy, you know, the human beings discovering, where do we relate if we go there? Like you said, if you put the gases in a certain way, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Same thing with humans. The way in which human beings are relating does nothing.
Yeah.
It does not turn us into water.
Right.
And so discovering, oh, I understand. If we go here, boom, like all of a sudden something happens.
Yeah.
And that can be nourished and it can be grown. And then from there, how do we then, as a unit, as a collective, as a, you know, let's say, let's get really into fantasy. What if you had a government that it wasn't weird, but that actually one of their functions was to build this connectivity between them so that they were fundamentally becoming like an organism together? And from there, and they kept returning to that and returning to that and developing that so that when they had to do the work of the differences of representing the various things, they never broke connection. Like something unitive was actually not only holding them, but also informing the way they were thinking and feeling and working together, that there was something greater that wasn't just individual agendas run amok.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously we're headed for that. I mean, there isn't any way that we can evolve without these new units of humanness connected from the right place.
Yeah.
And then it turns love, you know, it turns love into something wholly practical.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, love would be nice. And what we're really going to pay attention to is knowledge and power and a bunch of other things.
Right. Well, we had to get our power. We had to get knowledge. Those are all, you know, came on right on schedule, but we can see that they're, you know, at some point you got to move on. It's like kids grow up, you know?
Yeah. And what is it?
And hopefully they even grow into wise people at some point.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and wise old people, even, whatever.
All right, hold on one second. So we're going to take a short break. And again, I really do want to encourage people on the break, if you feel to go to evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com, and you can get the first three chapters right now if you want. So, and then Jeff Salzman and I will be back in a couple minutes. Hi, everybody. It's Patricia Albert, and I am here with Jeff Salzman, my very favorite integralist of all time. And we're talking about my book, actually, Evolutionary Relationships, and we're talking about love and connection and many things. So I don't know. Where would you like to take this?
Well, I one of the things that I also love about your book, and I didn't exactly expect it, was that you have a lot of practices in this book that you could do with other people. And I'm actually eager to do them. I've always seen myself more of an observer of these things, and I'm happy in that role. I like being sort of an anthropologist and, you know, looking at all of it. But I feel like this is something that I'm called to actually do with my partner Chuck, with friends. Mm-hmm. And so why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, just sort of practical practices that you have developed that people can check out?
Yeah, that's great. No, that is so – you have to let me know. So when you start doing some of the practices with Chuck, I want to hear. Okay.
Yeah, fair enough. I will.
I totally do. And I'm glad. I mean, because often, I don't know, when I've read books, usually I don't want to do the practices. You know, I'm like you. And I'm glad.
I want to know the practices. I want to know. I have my big schema of all the practices, and I know where they all fit. But do I want to do them? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. So with this, it's so important because one of the activating principles, as you've probably read in the book, has to do with engagement. And so part of this consciousness that's available and that we're pointing to, this consciousness of communion, of union, of entering into the, what did you call it, the lock?
The louche.
The louche. Entering into the louche, which is so exquisite and is so, it feels like home, you know, like when you really, when you open that up, all of a sudden you just feel like, oh, I'm home. Yeah. Like we were together. I don't remember the rest.
Yes.
And so to engage is very important. A lot of what, people do, and particularly in the paradigm that we're in, you know, the more postmodern paradigm, is, you know, the least you can do is to receive something. So you listen, you read, you absorb, you know, you take it in. And even if you go to an event, you sit there and listen, basically. Yeah. Maybe, you know, if you're lucky, the person listens. And so you're in a receptive mode. The next level of encounter would be then to take some action, you know, to begin to take some level of action, to get engaged on some level. With this, what I want to lead people towards is not only engagement, which would be taking action, but reciprocity. You know, so when you're beginning to do the practices, I'm giving, I'm saying something, you're really being with me and inside me, and then you're saying something, and we're really beginning to be reciprocal, which is kind of, which is believe it or not, missing a lot in our world.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just tracked your day and you looked at how much real reciprocity and mutuality is occurring, it's not occurring much as we need.
Yeah. I mean, I think of myself with Chuck, and Chuck and I are really close. We have a great thing going. When I think about the ways that we do what you're talking about, with mutuality it's in, like, we drove down to my friend's. It was an hour and 15 minutes in the car each way, and we just had a conversation the whole time. And that was great, But what you're talking about is almost accidental within that conversation,
right,
where we actually connect or we have a moment. And so it doesn't, you know, actually doing this intentionally,
right,
I think, is really, really important. And, you know, it's definitely an edge for me. It's an edge of my own development.
Mm-hmm. No, that's beautiful. I mean, the reciprocity is the interpenetration is the level that we want to awaken. And so what it would be, so let's say you were in the car and you could do this. I mean, you just have to be pointed in the right direction. You know how to move your consciousness, you know,
yeah,
around. You just have to remember, you know, it's
well
like, put it over here, put it over there. And part of the work of this, you know, of what I'm pointing to is also how do you move it around so it's not just inside you? You know, most of what we've learned is to be very subjective, you know, to be very, we know what our thinking is. We know how we feel about things. We know energetically what's happening with our bodies. You know, we've become inside of our own sort of bubble of self-concern, even on a high level of sensitivity, you know, and we're told that to be in touch with oneself is kind of like the highest thing you could have. You know, it's like that's the thing, you know, between that and being in touch with God and the divine. What interpenetration is you could easily, even while you're driving, because you can do more than one thing, right? Is you're driving, and what you do is you literally place your consciousness inside of Chuck.
Oh, Lord.
So you're in him as he's talking and you're driving.
Wow.
So you're kind of like feeling him as he's sharing. And while he, and if he's willing, he places his consciousness in you. So you're both inside each other as the conversation is flowing back and forth.
Wow. I could do that.
I know you can. Totally. You know, you just have to, I could have had a V8. You know, I'm just, it's like being put on the menu. You know, it's like, oh, I could do that. And he could too. And then all of a sudden, as you're practicing that more and more, just like, you know, like there are times when as lovers, we're kissing or we're making love or something's happening and you fall into one another and something bigger happens. And all of a sudden it just is like heaven. Like you're like, so let me stay here forever.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
And it's love and it's union and it's you and it's him and it's everything. You know, like everything is sort of awake and imbued.
Yeah.
That moment. Interpenetrating consciousness is that consciousness, and it absolutely is innate in us. We just haven't been paying attention.
Yeah. Or we have it accidentally, or, you know, whatever. Maybe when we're in love, we have it. We're maybe in the first stages of love.
Right, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, but it's not even what you're talking about, which is not just happy feelings.
Right. I mean, there's also a lot of projection. There's so many... thing, projection obviously happens in love when you first fall in love too, where you don't realize how separate you are.
Right.
Because when you're projecting your insane feelings of love, they don't necessarily feel anything.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and this interpenetrating, even this practice of me being in Chuck and Chuck being in me, you wouldn't want to do that. You know. So I can hear my more modernist friends saying something like, well, so you sit there and you're just doing this sort of like elaborate projection. And there's some truth to that in the sense that, you know, maybe some of that's happening, but this is what practice is all about, is that you bring a discriminating eye to what you're doing so that you end up actually doing it well, and you end up actually doing it right. I think it does take a certain level of development to do this.
Totally.
And the people that you're talking about, a minute ago you were talking about, you know, we've all in the sort of progressive spiritual world, we've done our therapy, we've done our body work, we've danced naked in the woods, we've screamed, we've done it all. And that's all great. I mean, yeah, it actually makes us worthy of doing this next thing.
It does. And it gives you, like, to be more developed with your gross level senses, you know, that you can taste and touch and feel and see, and your subtle senses, which is also that deeper sensitivity to energy and emotion and different kinds of, you know, subtle sense things. And this is even more in the invisible, but by paying attention, like you said, and by giving it, knowing that that's the next territory to conquer or to surrender into, or I don't know what, then it's also absolutely, you know, like where consciousness is headed, and we develop it together through mutual influence, through tracking something. So you realize that you're not actually projecting. You realize that there's a dance of influence occurring. Like I can feel it. Like I'll ask a group of people, like I, you know, do certain talks. I did an evening here in Berkeley on Saturday night, and we invited people inside the EC for 2 hours, which was really special. And,
I
talked to them about this interpenetration thing, and you know, we had about 100 people there, and I said, okay, so place your consciousness right now where my voice is. So if everybody comes into me where my voice is, we'll all be together. And you could feel them. All of a sudden it went woo, like the room shifted. And there was this incredible focal point of connection that was, you know, that we could feel at least for, you know, like 5 seconds or however long they held it. But and then when we were practicing and working and being with each other, you know, that interpenetrating level too. So if you can imagine, it's not just the heart. It's not just the intimacy of, let's say, you know, like the deep sense of closeness. You know, for you, you have a lot of friends that are brilliant, you know, very brilliant, smart men and women, you know, that, you know, that have a certain kind of liberated, intelligence, right? And when you do this, so if you were to practice with one of your buddies, right, and you're inside each other in a certain way and you kind of are managing that space, and then you go into riffing intellectually, whole different possibility, because you're in some kind of flow, and you're probably going to be getting insights and revelations together that you wouldn't get by just sharing each other's points of view.
No, that's right. Wow, that's true, isn't it?
That could be really fun.
Yeah, that could be really fun. even for a couple like eggheads, right?
Yeah,
like
totally.
Who actually get together to talk about things.
I know. Like if you consciously went there first and then you dropped into the space, like in the center, said, okay, let's explore this question or this topic from a place of even not totally knowing, not just sort of spouting stuff you already know. It could be fascinating to be used by something greater, you know, both people's individual DNA intelligence, right? But then kind of just exploring and seeing what came in the conversation by staying connected. It would be fascinating.
Well, I'm trying to do it right now with you. So I'm sitting in you.
I can
hearing you say what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost as you were talking and I was sort of practicing, if you will. But by that, I mean failing and doing it not so great, but I was continuing to do it. It was almost so exciting that I had to back off.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like too much. And I like that. I mean, there's a lot of juice there is really the point. But I could definitely feel just a thrill sensation of being Patricia. Oh, my God. And then I backed it back. I came back to be a Jeff.
I can feel you. You know what it is? our first line of connection is actually love. It is. I mean, some people, it's you'll find it would be more the head, but we actually have like a heart connection.
Yeah.
Naturally.
It's true, isn't it?
You know, we've known each other for like, what, 12, 15, I don't know, a long time.
Yeah, 12 years, I'd say.
12 years at least, yeah.
I was your first sidekick as you brought the Evolutionary Collective back. We did it at the Integral Center in Boulder.
Great. Yeah, but I mean, I think it is in the book, there are different kinds of exercises that people can easily. I mean, none of this is hard. It's just a matter of a willingness to pay attention in a particular way.
Right.
And together, anything, I find doing things by myself hard. Uh-huh. You know, to get my own motivation, the discipline, and I've got to do it, and I've got to make sure I remember. You know, it's just like a lot of work. when you do something together, there's a kind of increased attention. Because you're both sincerely trying. It actually is easier.
No, I can see that. Mm-hmm. But it's like a lot of these spiritual practices. I mean, even I think about something as sort of simple and basic as, for me, prayer. I mean, I grew up as a little Christian kid. I prayed. And you know, I've since learned a lot about, you know, the development of my spiritual life and Christianity, and I have a far more mature understanding of it now. But I got to say, when I pray, I'm astonished at the results of that. And yet, I don't remember to do it. I don't somehow bring myself to do it. And these kind of practices, it does take an effort to do them.
It does.
There's some sort of inertia in me, at least, and I think many of us, that just keep us in our lane, you know?
True.
And I think that's one of the things I most admire about you and the Evolutionary Collective, your groups of people. You're in there doing it.
Yeah. Well, it helps to have a structure. I mean, it does.
Yeah,
I mean, there are, you know, no matter, you know, if people discover that they want support in this kind of consciousness development. There are online, you know, it's kind of like you need the yoga studio. You know, you need a place to practice with others. You can't do this by yourself with a journal. So, you need another person. So we are providing, you know, there's online opportunities where we're gathering people so they can work together. And obviously the Evolutionary Collective is the most intensive version of that, but we do need support structures.
The Evolutionary Collective, you're doing your groups that are in real time and space, and you meet. And that's the Evolutionary Collective. And then you have an online option as well?
Yeah. So what we've developed now, like I'm about to start next week, there's an Evolutionary Relationships online course that is 6 months, and it's just twice. Uh-huh. It's two classes a month. So it's not, you know, too much to ask. And and basically they'll be taken into some of the perspectives. They'll always have opportunities to practice with other people. And we also have Zoom practices, extra ones that they can do as well, where they can see each other and do half hour practices. So, you know, we're trying to make it so that if people are interested, we're providing the right support.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know you were doing. I heard something about the online, but I didn't realize it was that evolved.
Yeah, we realized like we have to sort of create the, you know, it's kind of like a yoga studio. We have to create classes and opportunities so people can jump on and go, okay, even though I live in Europe, there's a Saturday Zoom that one of the teachers is conducting so that I can practice with other people from around the world. So we are doing that. Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah. We'll talk about, you know, just the radical nature of the next level of consciousness. Just think about what you just said.
Yeah.
People literally from all over the world, the needles in the haystack all over the world are finding a way to get together and create this new stuff. That's really true. Something.
Pretty amazing.
It really is.
We are coming towards the end of our times. And Jeff, yeah, you and I have, I can feel you. You just came back in. I could feel that. You know, we have a pretty porous relationship anyway. We've never been all that separate.
Yeah, it's yeah. pretty delicious, isn't it?
Pretty resonant.
Yes, it is.
So thank you for, just thank you for being yeah. Jeff Salzman and, being with me.
Right. It's apparently what I'm here to do. So, yeah.
And the other thing,
great privilege.
You're welcome. I mean, the other thing I want to say is that Jeff has amazing conversations with people that I know, some I know and respect and love, and many that I just respect on dailyevolver.com. So please go to his website at dailyevolver.com, and he's got just a plethora of really interesting blogs and talks and information that I'm sure people will really enjoy. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Patricia,
thank you for
inviting me on here. And thank you, everybody, for listening. It's been really so much good fun.
Definitely. All right. Thank you, everyone. And I will speak to you again next month.